So yesterday, Jeffrey said that in explaining the power restructure, you wanted to support your vision. Mm-hmm. He felt that, obviously, you needed a guy you were comfortable with. You hired Ed. Why is Ed more a better fit for you than what Howie was doing? Why are you more comfortable with
him? I think we just tried to maximize everybody's strengths, and Howie does an unbelievable job from the contract side and cap side, and we're just moving in a different direction from a personnel standpoint.
But he did not do an unbelievable job on the personnel side as far as what you
were
looking
for? No, I just
think
we're trying, it's the same thing with our staff. Sometimes you shuffle those guys around. We're just trying to put everybody in the right position.
What do you think of Howie's talent?
I thought he was good.
Could you expand on 2 years with him and whether he was able to kind of get Jeff remarked about how previously the team was built on maybe with more speed guys and how obviously the scheme's drastically different on both sides of the ball. Was he kind of getting you the players that you felt
No, I think some of that it depends on what players are available. You know, it doesn't, you know, you can all evaluate and say that whoever the top pick of the draft was, that Sammy Watkins really talented, but you don't have an opportunity to get Sammy Watkins. So a lot of it also depends on where you have an opportunity to make selections. So it's easy to look at it and say, I mean, I said it a year ago, I thought Odell Beckham was the best player in the draft. I was right. We didn't have a chance to get an Odell Beckham, but, you know, a lot of it depends on where you're selecting. So.
Have you felt that in the 2 years, because you didn't have final say, that if you had a feeling on a certain guy, you didn't always get, you weren't able to get that guy, even if he was available?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have final say, so I mean, you always defer to who's in charge at that point.
I mean, was that disappointing for you? Was it?
No, those were the rules. I knew those were the rules going in. So,
did you try to get those rules changed a little earlier?
No.
Why not?
That's not the way I operate. I have a meeting at the end of the year every year with Mr. Lurie, and He gets my views on things, I get his view on things, and then he ultimately makes the decisions on what he wants to do moving forward.
Chip, when you said you wanted to maximize everybody's strengths, you didn't know who your new guy was. So how did you know you could maximize your strengths without
that? I didn't go in with a plan saying we need to make all these maneuvers. I just said this is how I think my vision is of how this organization should be, but it's Mr. Lurie's decision on what he wants to do. If he came back and said, I want to do this, this, and this, and I want you to just concentrate on that, then that's what I would have done.
So why wasn't Tom Gamble, who you brought in, a strength?
I didn't bring Tom Gamble in. Howie brought Tom Gamble in.
So and he wasn't a strength?
Howie was in charge of the personnel department for the last 2 years, so I've never made a hire in the personnel department or a fire in the personnel department.
So Tom wasn't a strength, then, I assume. Right?
I wasn't involved in that.
You had input, though, right?
No. I have no input. I had no input in who was hired or fired in the personnel department. Nor do I have it now. Ed's in charge of personnel. I mean, we've maximized everybody. If something were to go on in personnel now, then that's under Ed's domain. That's what I hired him to do. It's no different than I hire Billy Davis to run our defense. I don't turn around and ask someone else, you know, what do you think about what Billy's doing defensively? Our defensive coaches have a certain role. Our offensive coaches have a certain role. Our personnel department has a certain role. So, I mean, I think there's a big misconception. I never hired Tommy Gamble. I was never in a position to hire Tommy Gamble.
What was it about Ed that made you think that he was ready for?
You know, it was an interesting process for me. I went out for probably 3 weeks and visited with a lot of people, talked to a lot of people, and Ed was the one guy in-house that I really wanted to talk to, and I actually interviewed him last. You know, we had never really sat down. I was impressed with his work ethic, impressed with his knowledge, you know, just sitting in draft meetings, sitting in free agents meetings, just listening to him talk, listening to him describe players, and was always like, hey, that guy's really sharp. And then he was the last guy I interviewed, and then the last guy Mr. Lurie interviewed. So, you know, kind of came away, I think he blew both of us away. It was like, wow, you know, this guy's extremely organized, extremely detailed, has a real good vision of what we're trying to get accomplished. And I thought he was outstanding.
Chip, you made two major trades. Were you physically on the phone working these deals and negotiating those two trades?
Well, sometimes it was a speakerphone, so.
But, I mean, what's that like? First time, you know, actually on the phone making deals?
First time on the phone talking to a person? It was scary. I didn't know how to operate the phone itself. I mean, it's just how, it's normally how you do it. I mean, we have conversations all the time, and the biggest thing, it's like these league meetings. I said, don't peek behind the curtain because it's not what you think it is. I mean, it's just having a conversation. Who do you have? What do you have? What do you want to do? Can you accept somebody from your cap standpoint? You know, a lot of decisions are made. Most of the decisions from a trade standpoint are those decisions. You'd like to acquire a ton of players, but you can't fit them in under your cap. Yep. You know, so it really kind of limits which teams you're dealing with, how you're dealing with them, and then what they're trying to give back. Some of them don't have draft picks. You'd like to get draft picks, but they may not have draft picks. So now take a look at your roster. Who do you like on the roster?
Since we talked to you last, have you received any more phone calls about Sam Bradford? I know you said other teams were interested.
No.
Given the fact that you and Ed don't have a lot of experience in your current roles, are you leaning on other people for whether it's trade evaluations, whether it's the upcoming draft, people that have been more active in it for a longer period of time?
No.
At safety, what's the plan next to Malcolm Jenkins, that spot that Nate Allen occupied most of the time?
Well, we'll go through OTAs, we go through the draft, we'll go through preseason camp and then figure that out.
Are there internal options that you think to step in?
Yeah, we'll take a look at that. I mean, that's what this process is all about, the offseason, get a chance to see guys on the field. What's Earl like in year three? I mean, there's guys on our team right now that can certainly play that role, but it depends on where they are when you get a chance to see them through OTAs, through minicamp, through preseason camp. So.
What about us through the process of what's going to happen next in the next couple of months with Sam Bradford? Get him back on the football field functioning as a quarterback.
Well, he's back. I mean, when we got him on a Wednesday, he was there the following Sunday, so he's been with our training staff every day rehabbing, and then we get a chance to finally meet with him on April 20th, which is the first day of phase one, you know, and then it's the normal process it is for anybody on our team, whether it's Sam's obviously new, but it's no different than what D'Amico Ryans is going through right now, so it's pretty detailed. I mean, it's just straightforward. Phase one, you can talk to him, but you can't be on the field with him. Phase two, you get to go on the field with them, but there's no defense across from them. Phase three is the beginning of OTAs and minicamp, and we'll go from there.
What do you hope to see from him physically with the knee?
It sounds like he's on target to be fully recovered. I just don't know exactly what day he'll be cleared to be 100%, but I know he's running and moving around right now. We're not allowed to be there when any of that stuff's going on, so I couldn't tell you what he looks like movement-wise or anything like that.
Do you know when he'll go see Dr. Andrews to get cleared?
I don't know that exact date. No, I don't.
Have you done research?
He should be ready to go because his was done earlier than Sam, so I think sometime during OTAs we'll be able to see Kiko moving around a little bit.
In the meantime, the quarterback will Mark take a lot of most of the reps or all the reps with him?
No, all our quarterbacks take reps in the offseason, so we never care in an OTA if G.J. Kinney or Mark or Matt are in there. That, you know, you never look up and say, why is that guy with that guy? That's why we just rotate somebody grab the snap, but that's not a big deal.
Do you have Sam in the rotation at some point during the season?
It's all dependent on what the doctors say. So,
Chip, it sounded like Jeffrey Lurie obviously was very fond of Sean Ford. What did you have to do to convince him that it was better for the team?
Well, I'm very fond of LeSean McCoy. I think we all are. But when you look at moving forward, and that was just a really big number, you know, and they weren't moving off the number, so that was where the decision was made. But, I mean, you're talking about the all-time leading running back for the Philadelphia Eagles. He led the league in rushing 2 years ago. It was a real difficult decision, but it was a decision we felt we had to make. We had too much money at the running back spot, so we had to move in a different direction.
Did you have to explain all that to Jeffrey Lurie?
No, he understood. He was a pretty sharp guy.
But all said and done, is the money any different now?
Yeah, our right now, DeMarco's $5 million this year. Ryan's $2 million this year. And I think Darren's 4.1. So that adds up to less than 11.9.
So it was about the cap number this year, and you approached him about trying to get that number down?
No, our guys talked to his agent, but I don't negotiate with him, so I didn't speak specifically with Drew. But
Jeff said yesterday that you wanted more of a one-size-fits-all. Said prior that you could work with any type of quarterback. Did that factor anything into it?
No, I think you can. I mean, I've done it everywhere. When I was at Oregon, I had Jonathan Stewart and LeGarrette Blount, both 230-plus. I also had LaMichael James and Kenyon Barnard. I mean, we can work with whatever we have. It's just depending on what you want to do and how do you want to scheme it up. But I think what was available, if you move LeSean, what's available? The guys that were available are one-cut downhill runners. So can they fit into what we do offensively? Yeah.
Jeff talked yesterday about finding a franchise quarterback being one of the most important things as far as going from good to great. Can Sam be that franchise quarterback if he can stay healthy?
Yeah, hope so. But I mean, I'm not a predictor guy, so I'm not going to put a label on anybody. So,
With Sam, how much research did you look into players, especially a quarterback who had torn the same knee twice, and how productive they were able to be?
I think we looked at everybody. I mean, look at our starting receiver who had 85 catches.
I'm saying specifically a quarterback who's...
Yeah, I would say it's probably easier for a quarterback with a knee injury than it is with a shoulder injury, as we went through the history of it, you know. You know, we didn't bring Sam to run the ball 75 times a game, so I think it's a lot easier for a quarterback with an ACL than it is for a receiver with an ACL. But, you know, you look at, I think, the history right now in terms of sports science and what doctors are doing now has moved forward. It's unbelievable. You know, look at the year Jeremy Maclin had coming off of two ACLs. You know, look at our center. Jason Kelce came off an ACL when I first got there, was just coming off an ACL, had a sports hernia surgery in the middle of the season and still made the Pro Bowl. Our left tackle, who's arguably a Hall of Famer, is coming off of two Achilles and has played at an outstanding level. So,
to follow up on Sal's question, is Sam going to be able to participate in phase three?
I don't have that answer right now, so I don't know exactly where he is. I haven't talked to Chris, or, you know, we'll take that when it comes. I don't know when his final meeting with Dr. Andrews is, but I know he's progressing the way he normally should progress from that injury.
So. I know you don't deal with the contracts, but if you guys approach Sam Bradford about redoing his deal, are you comfortable?
No, I'm not going to discuss any current players' contracts.
Are you comfortable going in on a one-year deal? You're okay with
that? I'm comfortable with Sam as our quarterback. Yeah.
Did you reach out to the Rams for Sam Bradford, or did they reach out to you about trading?
I think it was a mutual thing. You know, it went on for a couple weeks. You know, we were trying to keep Nick if we could. That was we were trying to keep Nick. You know, it was just at the last second they wanted players. We were trying to get it done with draft pick, but it didn't work. It didn't work out that way.
Do you envision moving Jordan Matthews outside primarily as a keeping this spot?
I don't know. I mean, it's the spring. Everybody plays everywhere in the spring, and we'll figure it out. I don't know if we add anybody, and what are their strengths and what are their weaknesses. And I mean, it's not playing inside receiver. Well, he was a rookie, so we just wanted him to play one position and learn one position and come in. Yeah, he can do it, just like Josh can do it. You know, Riley Cooper could move into the slot for us. I mean, once you're in there, the biggest thing we do is when we get rookies in there, it's, hey, you're playing one spot. Let's not put a lot on your plate. It's no different than Zach Ertz. His package was expanded in year two than it was in year one, just because when they first get in there, it's a totally different world for them. Once they get comfortable there, you start to see them move around and play a lot of different spots. So I can envision Jordan playing in a lot of different spots for us.
Chip, most of the guys in your scouting department were brought in by Howie. Most of them were. With Ed in charge of it now, and with Jeffrey saying that you attack scouting with a different way that he's ever seen before, does Ed have to train the scout? I mean, do there have to be changes in the scouting department so that they're getting your type of guy?
I think that happens no matter what coach is there. If you change from one scheme to another, then what you're looking for in a player is different. 4-3 will linebacker is different than a 3-4 outside linebacker. That's football.
Right, but Jeffrey Wayne point is saying it's you do it so uniquely and so differently. So I was wondering if you
I think
feel
we're
like
very specific in what we're looking for, but I think
that
our guys have done a great job in that in terms of identifying it.
So you don't see yourself making sweeping changes in the scouting department?
No. I mean, that's a question for Ed, but when I hire him, run it. It's personnel department. You go make it the way you want to make it look.
2 weeks ago, you said that you spoke against philosophically trading way up in the draft, burning resources that you needed for the future. If Marcus Mariota didn't go like in the top five, is there a point, and can you give any idea of the point where it would be reasonable to try to trade up?
No.
Evan Mathis's name has been mentioned.
Well, I mean, I could deal with hypotheticals all the time. I mean, give me a scenario. If he goes to 12 and it's going to cost us a seventh-round conditional pick, then that would be very – I mean, you can go through it back and forth. That's what this is all about. So, philosophically, I want to keep all our draft picks. I think you build your team through the draft. So if you gut yourself for 1 year and for one guy, philosophically, I don't think that's the right thing to do. Does that mean you don't do that?
Yeah, Marcus Mariota, the guy you recruited, coached, he's there, available, and you don't have to gut him.
Yeah.
There's a hypothetical. What do you do?
I don't answer hypotheticals. So what's it cost, Sal? Give me a number.
Two first-round picks.
Where am I going? From where to where?
Going up to six.
Never get you there. Took two first-round picks to go from six to two 3 years ago.
what do you consider mortgaging the future?
I consider mortgaging the future giving up your draft, like for Ricky Williams. Mm-hmm. Would I give up a whole draft for Ricky Williams? In my opinion, no. Mm-hmm.
Do you think Matt Mariota, you said you think he's the best quarterback in the draft. Do you think because of that, there's no way that he drops out of the top five?
I have no idea. I thought Odell Beckham was the best player in the draft. He went at 12. He ended up a rookie of the year.
What do you think of the quarterback position overall in the draft?
I think there's two really good ones.
You said
two really good ones. Jameis is really good. Do I like Jameis more? I don't know Jameis as well. Jameis is a really good quarterback. Really good quarterback. His name will go very quickly, I would imagine. But the history of the league, look at the quarterbacks that have been drafted in the top. Mark Sanchez was a top five pick. Jake Locker was a top 10 pick. Gabbert went at 10. Ponder went at 12. Quarterbacks go really fast in this league.
You said in Philadelphia, introducing the Bradford back then, that a team made an offer for a first round pick for him that day. Have there been others since that day?
No.
You made changes at the running back position, obviously. What about from a scheme perspective? Are there changes you need to make? Excuse me. Are there changes you need to make from a scheme perspective with the run game this offseason?
No. I mean, we run the same play. We run power. We run zone. We run outside zone. Those guys, Ryan and DeMarco, have done all those things. So they fit in terms of what we do.
I was talking more about what worked and what hasn't worked last year. I mean, you need to make additions regardless of the personnel. Just from what worked from a scheme perspective.
A scheme? No.
Will Evan Mathis be on the team next year?
I hope so.
His name's come up a good amount in trade speculation. Are you guys actively trading him?
No.
Or shopping him?
No. But, I mean, as I said the other day, everybody on our roster is available if someone wants to call. You know, and if the scenario comes up and someone says, I want to give you two first-round draft picks for somebody, then, yeah, we would listen. I mean, we traded LeSean, and that was a very difficult decision to do, but we felt at the end of the day, we're going to listen to every offer we have, and then you'd be crazy to say, no, this isn't going to happen or this isn't going to happen, because you have no idea what you're going to get offered for somebody.
Was Drew Rosenhaus given permission to seek a trade again like he was last year?
Yes, he was.
And there hasn't been anything come of that?
No, not at all.
Besides familiarity,
we felt he deserved it. I mean, I think his performance in the last 2 years since I've been here was exceeded what his contract was.
Chip, is that something that most teams generally don't do? Is that something that you feel like maybe you bring a different approach to giving contracts on the rest of you guys? You know, there's no imperative for you to do that.
There's no what?
There's no imperative for you to give him. I mean, there was no reason for you to give him a contract.
I believe you earn what you do, and I think we all believed what Connor did for us is exceeded what he did, what his contract was.
Are you talking with Fletcher Cox about reworking his
contract? I'm not going to discuss anybody's contract on our team.
Besides familiarity, what else about Kiko Alonso made him a must-get for you in that trade?
159 tackles in 16 games, 4 interceptions, played every defensive snap. I mean, just turn the tape on and you know what type of player you're getting.
Let's go back to Marcus for a second, Chip. You can understand why we're...
Yeah. No, it's what makes sports great. I mean, you got nothing to talk about on sports radio. Let's talk about trades. And everybody's going to go, I want this guy, that guy, and this guy. You know what's unique about it, though? How come no one asked Jim Harbaugh about trading up for Andrew Luck? Same scenario. Identical scenario. I never heard a word about Jim, are you trading up to get Andrew Luck? I don't.
He didn't compare Luck to Peyton Manning.
What?
He didn't compare Andrew Luck to Peyton Manning.
I think he compared. Figure out what he said about Andrew Luck. I know how Jimmy feels about Andrew Luck.
The Colts were fairly committed at that time. They announced that before the draft.
Before the draft? Like in January, like when you guys started all these conversations?
Not January.
No,
but they seemed intent on taking Luck.
Okay, it's just a curious question. Okay, I was just curious why no one talked about Jimmy and Andrew. And Jimmy's professed love for Andrew, I can tell you that. And he's right, because that guy's pretty good too.
So getting back to the question about Marcus Mariota, you can understand why we want to talk to you.
Yeah, and you can understand why I'm not going to answer you.
So, we've heard a lot of things about Mariota recently that he's not NFL ready because he doesn't have leadership skill and all that other stuff. Talk to us a little bit about what you know about this player specifically, his character, his ability to step onto an NFL field?
I think everybody gets overanalyzed. You know, there's just so much time between it. And then I'll give the credit to Bruce Feldman, told me it's interesting that the knock on Marcus is his baggage is that he has no baggage. He's an outstanding leader. Look at his one loss record. You know, you judge quarterbacks on what their one loss record is. You judge quarterbacks on touchdown to interception ratio. You judge them on all those things, and he's off the charts. And he's off the charts off the field.
There was a report that some executives who had talked to him didn't like the fact that he was not fiery, you know, wears emotions on his sleeve in the huddle, and that it just didn't endear to them. I mean, you coach him, do you even evaluate that as part when you look at?
Yeah, you evaluate everything when you look at him. But just because a guy doesn't yell and scream at a guy when he doesn't run the right route is. Ask any of those guys if they take Eli Manning. I don't see Eli Manning screaming and yelling at anybody, but, you know, you talk about a stone-cold killer in the fourth quarter. Look at how many fourth-quarter comebacks Eli's had. I mean, it's the silly season. I've said it before. The NFL draft hype is the most crazy thing in the world, and guys are going to go up, guys are going to go down, and guys are going to go up. Cam Newton couldn't play. Everybody, there's no reason to draft him in the first round. All of a sudden, he goes number one. I knew it. I mean, it's crazy.
Chip, explain philosophically, football-wise, why it's not good for a team to trade that far up using a lot of draft picks.
Philosophically? More players are better than one player. Philosophically. That's bottom. I mean, the history of the game. Study all the trades. What set the Cowboys going forward? They traded one player for multiple players. I mean, that's just... I got a better chance at hitting. It's not an exact science to draft. It's a better chance at hitting if you have more draft picks than you have less draft picks. That's basically it philosophically.
Is it harder to evaluate a player, that position harder to evaluate when you do those kind of things, if you would trade up?
Is it hard? I think
is a quarterback harder to evaluate when you're trading all those picks than another position?
No. I mean, the Saints traded all those draft picks for Ricky Williams. You tell me.
Are there no exceptions to that philosophy in your opinion?
It's a philosophy. There's exceptions to every philosophy. People used to think the world was flat, philosophically, right? Until that guy took the boat and just kept going and it didn't fall off the edge, right?
Do you feel like there's a bit in completion percentage-wise in your scheme? Like Mark Sanchez scored percentage by 56 and Austin goes 64 with you. Nick, the same thing. Do you feel like when you look at Sam, who generally considered a pretty accurate quarterback, that naturally he should have that bump?
No. I mean, it's still all about the players. I mean, I can put some players in there and they're not going to complete a pass. It's still a personnel-driven, you know, that whole it's the system. It's not the system. It's still about the players. It's just putting them in positions, I think, where you can read their strengths and read their weaknesses and trying to put them in position to make plays, but I don't think so. I don't know. I've said it before, I didn't really study what he was doing. I also think he had he had a lot of different coordinators, you know, from year to year to year, so wasn't really entrenched in one system. I didn't study it that way, you know.
I'm curious about Maxwell. We didn't ask him much about him when he signed. Going from a scheme where he had, a defense where he had two Pro Bowl safeties behind him, and now he has a lot of responsibility in the Eagles defense. How do you project him coming over?
Yeah, I think that's a misconception because he didn't have two safeties behind him. I mean, they're either a cover three or cover one, and they don't play too deep. So, you know, Cam's usually down in the box, but... You know, the one thing I think that's interesting with Byron is that because of how good Richard Sherman is, he got the scheme-wise a lot of times the best receiver. Everybody tried to scheme people, and he got the most balls because you're not going to throw on Richard. So, you know, he's got a great skill set, great size, great length, really smart, intuitive football player, benefited from really good coaching in Seattle. Pete does an unbelievable job with defensive backs, but you know, I think he also benefited again playing opposite of Richard because he saw a lot, did a really good job. The other thing they did with him, his versatility is he played in the nickel, you know, so he's played inside corner as opposed to just being predominantly an outside corner. So he's got a lot of versatility in terms of being able to move him around.
Is that a way you can use him too?
I mean, I think there's a lot of ways you can use him. We won't get our hands on him until the end of April, but I'm sure Billy will. You know, is excited to have someone like him that has that type of versatility to kind of move around.
How do you look at your other spot?
Thurman.
You know, we got Thurman, Nolan, Brandon. Yeah, they'll all play it out right now. You know, and if unless we do something here later, Boykin. Yeah, unless we do something here later, and you know, if we add somebody in free agency or the draft, then they'll compete on for that other spot and how that will work out.
How likely are you to still make a free agent move now?
Percentage-wise or fractions
just,
or?
You know.
I don't know.
I mean,
I really don't.
I mean, you haven't made one in a while, and guys are starting to come off the market, and now it's a different kind of market now. So
yeah,
just that
you're trying to see what the market is. There's conversations going on, but I couldn't say one way or the other, highly or unhighly or unlikely.
Do you think you can, like, you know, find a top wide receiver in the draft? Do you think there's someone like, you know, you mentioned Odell Beckham last year and everything in the draft who can kind of fill in for what Jeremy did?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a talented draft class. We're still kind of putting that all together, but it's another year where there's some really, really good receivers in the draft, and I think there's probably the one position, again, that has the most depth in the draft is probably wide receiver.
More so than running back?
We felt, yeah.
Last offseason, you talked a lot about having to beat man coverage. Is there a similar theme or a focus where you look at this offseason, we need to get better in this area when we make some of these personnel moves?
No, I mean, it actually flipped for us. We saw less man last year than we did the year before, so I think it was 60 man first year and 40 man the second year, so you know, it'll probably change again.
Billy has never seemed interested in moving Brandon to the outside. I mean, he basically said he was too small to play outside, he preferred bigger guys. Has that changed? I mean, is his thinking changed?
No, I think we show us what we have and what's available to us, and everybody competes, but Brandon plays outside every day in practice. You know, I mean, that's something that I don't think, you know, when Brandon goes out to practice, he's not like this. Like, I don't look at what the outside corners do. I mean, he's been our second corner behind Fletch and Kerry, and it was Nolan and Brandon. So he's always played outside. But he also, when you're playing nickel, you get less reps outside, because how many reps do you have in 7-on-7? If there's 12 reps in 7-on-7 and 7 of them are nickel reps, well, he's getting all his reps at nickels. He's not going to go in with the twos and then go play outside receiver. It's the same thing with Nolan when we used him at dime. It took away from some of his reps at outside corner just because you're not going to run them on every snap during practice. But whoever is the best out of that group will play corner for us.
Have you thought at all about moving Nolan?
I mean, that's the first full season that second-year players had. I'm wondering what you think about Josh Allen. What would you like to see out of him with his first full offseason? What do you think he needs improvement on?
I think Josh's consistency, and the biggest thing with him is getting hurt in that preseason game that kind of put him behind everybody. And then when we got him back, I think it was after the San Francisco game, so we'd already played 4 or 5 games, you know, so he was playing a little bit of catch-up. So you hopefully just to stay, you know, it was just kind of a freak thing on that kickoff return, but contributed really well for us. He's an unbelievable teams player. So we already know he's established there, and now it's just getting a little bit more consistent and he'll get an opportunity now with Matt gone. So, you know, I just think, like everybody, you just hope that year one to year two jump. You know, we know he has the physical skills and the mindset to do it. It's just staying healthy and getting an opportunity to show us that.
Is this the move to retain Mark Sanchez? Can you talk about what he showed you last year? And how important is that position of backup quarterback?
I think quarterback's the position in the National Football League, and you better have a couple of them. I mean, in my 2 years here, we've played multiple quarterbacks in every season. So we thought he was the most attractive free agent on the market, and we were really excited to be able to get him back. You know, another year in our system, another year working with him. Got a tremendous work ethic. I think he's really come along since the shoulder surgery that set him out the whole year before that. So excited to see his growth in the second year in our system.
Is Marcus Smith another guy? You mentioned like the second year jump and everything. Like, what does he have to do to kind of like take that next step?
The same thing I said about Josh, consistency. You know, there's times he flashes, but can we get it from him on a more consistent basis?
Chip, I know in your last press conference, someone tried to ask you about why you wanted Sam instead of Nick, and you stopped him and said, no, it's not about what I don't like in Nick. But you did trade one for the other, essentially.
As I said earlier, we didn't want to trade Nick. That was really the biggest sticking point for us. We didn't want to lose Nick.
Right, but you didn't want to lose him. But
ultimately,
you did trade
him. Yeah,
you
have to make a decision of it's the same thing. I didn't want to lose Deshaun, but you got to give something up to get something.
Right.
So
what did you think you were getting more of for you and for your scheme by getting Sam and giving up Nick?
You know, I think when you look at Sam, it's his overall accuracy that I think impresses everybody when you watch him play. You know,
do you feel like he would, at his best, is a more accurate quarterback than Nick at his best?
Oh, I don't know about that, but I mean, just looking at where we are and what we need to do, I think we've got guys open and we need to put the ball on them in certain situations. So.
Does he move an offense faster, going back to even Oklahoma? I mean, the pace that he runs with,
I have no idea what he did pace-wise. I mean, when you watch college tape, you don't know what's going on between the plays. You're just watching one play cut to the next play. So,
when you scouted him, did you just look at his pro tape, or did you go back to the Oklahoma tape?
I didn't go back to it, but I talked to his coaches at Oklahoma. So I didn't watch him at Oklahoma, but we watched every throw he made in college. So, I mean, every throw he made in the pros.
Statistically, he didn't throw.
On the offensive line, right guard, what do you think of the internal options there?
Really excited about Allen. We've been high on Allen for a long time. You know, was playing really well and then hurt his ankle in the first game. So, you know, we always considered Allen, you know, came in the year before, did an unbelievable job when JP was out against Green Bay in a real tough matchup, you know, against a real good team in Green Bay, and really did well for himself. Versatile player, but feel very confident in Allen Barbary.
At inside linebacker, when D'Amico's healthy, how do you envision him playing along with Kiko and Michael?
You have no idea. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen 4 weeks from now, 5 weeks from now, 4 months from now. You know, they all may be hurt, and it may be Brad Jones and Acho. So,
when you make trades to bring in Kiko, do you think about how that will affect the linebacker position?
Yeah, I knew both those linebackers, I think D'Amico missed 8 and Michael missed 4. So, you know, it was really we getting depth at our inside linebacker position and getting more players. It was a number, really something what we were striving to get accomplished in the offseason.
Did Kiko need to call throws and he made the two running backs?
Yeah, we call everybody when that happens. So I talked to Darren, I talked to D'Amico, we've talked to everybody whenever we do that. When we draft somebody, we talk to the other guys at their position. So that's something we've always done. So.
Chip, were the Browns the team that offered you the number one?
I'm never going to discuss who we talked to in trade situations.
Chip, yesterday Jeff Lurie said, you know, when you bring in free agents, sometimes you don't know how they're going to fit into your scheme, your system, your culture, or if they're going to understand how things are done. You'd much rather build a team through the draft and in the years going forward because of that?
Philosophically?
Yeah.
Yes.
So this past offseason, the risks involved with bringing in players, free agents and stuff like that, did you look into, you know, the personalities and everything?
Yeah, you try to. You gather all the information you can. You don't have an opportunity to meet with any of them, and you go through all their, you know, the research that was done on them in college coming out. You know what they were like, and you know you have a framework of kind of who they are, and you know if you have an opportunity to maybe have somebody that knows them or coached them, or you know when free agency opens, you get a chance to visit and talk with them, but. You know, that's just, for us, if you just look at it, there hasn't been a real good history in the last 10 years of drafting defensive backs at the Eagles, so you got to go acquire them in free agency. So you hope we can draft a little bit better so we don't have to do that when we go in the future.
When Jeffrey was talking yesterday about why he felt changes were necessary, he spoke about how esoteric your requirements are.
SAT word? Different.
you understand what esoteric means.
I'm just giving you credit.
You have really, really specific requirements. How hard is it to train scouts to do what you want them to do, to look at what you want them to look at? And has that been a problem for you?
No, not at all. I think we've got a great scouting staff.
Very different from what other people want, you think?
No, I think everybody has specific needs and wants that they have at their positions. You know, what Seattle's looking for is different than what San Francisco's looking for. I think the teams that do it the best are getting players that fit their system.
Is the risk that you run that you're shrinking the pool too much if you're looking for this specifically psychologically, this specifically from a measurable standpoint, on and on? I mean, does it shrink the level of talent? Could that be a potential problem? How much do you think about that, and what's the solution?
That's a $64,000 question, but you can say, you know what, our parameters are too tight, so let's expand them, and then expect it. So if you accept that you're going to take a 5'7" corner and the ball gets thrown over his head, you can't say, boy, he should have made that play. He ain't going to make the play. The receiver's 6'4", you know, so there's a give and take. It's a tough deal, but if you know, it's a if you take under overachievers that aren't the right size at every position, eventually you're going to have a 5'10 nose guard, but with a 5'9 inside linebacker with a 5'8 safety, and they're going to run the ball right down your throat, and you have no one to kick in the pants except for yourself because you decided to make those selections. So if you're going to have a standard in any operation, your business, your newspaper, whatever, and say, you know what, I want a guy that's really good at this. This guy doesn't really fit the criteria, but let's just hire him anyways. And then you wonder why your business failed. It's because you lowered your standards to get to a certain point.
One of the things that Jeffrey Lurie talked about yesterday, Chip, he said when you guys had the postmortem on the season, you presented a vision to go from good to great, and that he bought into that. So when you plugged in the tape with your team, give us the two or three things that you said to him, this is how we can go from good to great.
I think we have to improve on defense. You know, overall, I think we got to be better in the back end. We weren't good in the secondary. We had too many X plays over our heads. Offensively, we have to clean up the turnovers. You know, they were at an all-time high for any system that I've ever been in. You know, so we got to make decisions in terms of being better in terms of securing the football on the offensive side of the ball, and really felt like we had to get better depth at inside linebacker and in the secondary. So that's really from a football standpoint, that's what we were talking about.
Did you feel that after plugging in the tape on your defense, did you found that you needed some more physicality, a little bit more toughness on defense?
No, I think our run defense is outstanding. So I not at all. I think that's a strength of our defense. I think it was our pass defense that we were trying to improve.
The scouting philosophy.
Jump back a little bit to the question of the talent pool and what it is. Do you feel like the draft board was smaller than
No.
There isn't. I think a report out there that you guys, your first round, you guys didn't have any first round grades of guys last year. Do you feel like that you have as many draft prospects each year as other teams not taking them off?
No. Talking to guys that were in other programs, no. Most boards are similar. I mean, and if a guy doesn't have a first round grade, you don't look at the board and say, we don't have enough first round, so let's put this guy in the first round.
It's insane. Yeah, the draft just decides.
The pool is what the pool is. You can't make it. I mean, that's your selections. The presidential candidates are the presidential candidates. You're picking between this presidential candidate and that presidential candidate. You just can't say, well, I don't like that guy and I don't like that guy. Well, you got to pick one of them, right?
Did you just announce your
candidates? No, never.
Hey, Coach, I'm sorry if you've been asked before. I cover the Cowboys, but can you talk about what DeMarco Murray brings, what drew you to him, to your offense?
Obviously, you just look at him statistically in terms of what he did. We faced him four times. You know what type of a workhorse back he is, but got unbelievable patience and vision, a toughness to him, you know, never really takes negative yardage plays. And then when I finally got a chance to visit with him, I think it was on either that Wednesday or Thursday after free agency started, just, you know, I didn't really know what type of player he was. When the first conversation I had with him on the phone, I was, you know, just impressed with him as a guy, you know, and what his mindset is and what he wants to get accomplished, and you know, really excited to add him to our side.
Is it also exciting that you get him and you take him away from the Cowboys because he's sort of an important part of them? It lessens them.
No, we never look at it that way. We're just trying to acquire players, and we don't say, you know, let's take this player over that player because it's going to make that team.
Chip,
you know, I know Dallas is going to be a real tough opponent for us again when we play him this year. So.
There's a lot of conversation in Dallas about the workload that Murray had last year, and a big role that he played in that offense. What kind of thought did you give to that? I mean, I think he had 450 touches last year. Those type of, I guess, mentor type questions.
Yeah, we have thought with that, and that's why we wanted to bring in two running backs. So that's why we brought DeMarco and Ryan Matthews in. So.
You described Sproles last week as a Swiss Army knife.
Mm-hmm.
But last year, you kind of used him as more straightforward role. I mean, you didn't move him around a whole lot. Do you anticipate maybe being more creative with him this year?
Yeah, we do. You know, and it's just acclimation. But also for us, you know, and a lot of times, especially early in the year, he was our only other running back. So, you know, kind of moving him around and putting him in a lot of different spots, you're kind of holding your breath because early, I think it was, I can't remember if it was one or two games where our third running back was Trey Burton because Chris was injured. So, you know, you got to kind of – that's why our goal in this offseason, if we move LeSean, was we wanted to bring two guys in. We wanted to have some depth at the running back spot and possibly carry four guys during the season. And you know, that's there's a lot of factored into that. But I think obviously in year two – a lot more familiarity with what we're doing and getting acclimated in terms of what we're doing. We need to get him on the field more.
It seems like if your running backs are healthy, you know, DeMarco, Ryan, and it's roles that Chris Pope probably has, a limited role. It's probably, I mean, it's safe to say it's not going to be expanded from last year as long as everyone's...
No, that's not safe to say.
So do you expect to expand his role?
I don't know. I mean, we could get to game one. He could be the only running back standing, so... I mean, you're talking about two physical running backs in DeMarco and Ryan, so you better have some depth. You know, there's a style that those guys run with where they're gonna take some hits, and you got to be able to have some depth when you have those type of guys.
Do you find, like, going through the whole training process, you know, courting free agents and stuff, do you find that's a lot like, you know, recruiting?
Jesus.
Do you find that's kind of like, you know, what it was like recruiting when you were at Oregon, you know, in college and everything like that?
No. Because they don't visit till a lot of them. I wish there was a visit period, but they don't really visit. You know, they're coming in and going, so it's a little bit different.
So there's not much from that experience.
A lot of it's done over the phone when you have a chance to talk to them. So.
So then that scouting.
And it's a real short window.
Sorry, that scouting philosophy then that you just articulated. Where did you develop that? How was that influenced? That's how you want to do it at the NFL level.
Just learning from a lot of people that have been in this league for a long time and picking their brains on how you want to put things together. But philosophically, I think everybody would say the same thing, that they have the guys that can't tell you what they want in a player are probably the teams that aren't successful. When guys are specific and know exactly what they want, you know, then you have a chance to fix it from an understanding. But if you don't understand what you want in a player or defensive scheme or an offensive scheme, then you never can correct a mistake because you don't even know if you're making a mistake.
And speaking of Sanchez,
how have your offseason moves been about talent versus how they fit into your program? Like, how much do you weigh those two things?
They both go hand in hand. So I don't think you can sacrifice one for the other, or it doesn't work that way. You can have a guy that's got all the intangibles in the world, but if he doesn't have the talent to play, it really doesn't matter. And you can have the guy who's the most talented player ever, but if he doesn't fit into with the rest of the players on a team because it's a team game, then that's not going to work either. So,
the changes in scheme he had, but in Bradford's case, similar, he had three offensive coordinators in 4 years, didn't have a lot of offensive talent around him in some cases. When you watch each throw he made, how do you project that into your scheme? What are you looking for?
I don't think you're not looking. I don't think we look at it as a projection. I'm just looking at what can he do and what can't he do when you're watching film, because you don't know what he's asked to do. Like, I don't know what the play call is on the third throw of the game, you know, and what his progression was from 1 to 2 to 3, or, you know, was he told to throw it there no matter what? You're watching his skill set. How does he set his feet? How does he avoid a rush? Are his eyes up? How does he take a hit? How does he deliver a short ball? How does he deliver a deep ball? What's he like on intermediate throws? What's he like when he sets his feet and throws? What's he like when he gets flushed? You know, when he can't get his back foot down and has to throw off balance? You know, that's what you're evaluating when you're watching the tape aspect. You're not looking at it, how does this fit in schematically? You're just looking at a skill set.
Just checking your 2 years in the NFL, what have you learned about developing a rookie? More specifically, do you guys think you put Marcus Smith in a good position last year to succeed? Or is there anything you wish would have handled better with him?
No, I mean, I think we do a real good job because our guys get more reps than everybody else. But the bottom line is you have to earn your position. You know, there's not a – you don't have time when you're competing for a division title to throw a guy out there and say, hey, let's see how he develops right now. I mean, when the game's on a line, the game's on a line. And in the way it broke down for us, we're one game away from making a playoff. So, you know, shame on us if we were just trying to – well, we didn't get a chance to win that game because we were trying to develop some younger players. I mean, that's – maybe if you were on a different team, maybe if you're in a team that's you know it's a rebuilding project and it's a 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 year deal from where you're going to be, then it's a different mindset. But when we got here, it wasn't that way. I mean, we won the division in our first year. We were right in the heat of the battle last year. So, but I don't think from any standpoint, and I think it's the same thing with the players, if you just put a guy out there that doesn't deserve to be out there, then you lose the rest of your team. You know, what do you stand for? You know, when we're about competition and you earn it, you know, there's not one guy on our team that can say, you know what, I didn't get enough reps. You know, they get a ton of reps and they get evaluated every day. And then your opportunity to show us what you can do to contribute. And if you show us that you can contribute, then we're going to get you on the field because you're going to help us win games.
Do you feel like Marcus did enough to...
Your zone replays done in the NFL. I mean, the first year, you were helping because of line. I think that probably had a lot to do with the success of those plays. Last year, not as healthy and
different quarterback for the majority of the season with Sanchez. How do you think that play?
We don't run as much zone read as you think we run. Just because we hint,
you do, but I know. Play you run,
probably less than two times a game.
Do you think?
So
the
I
NFL
think
to play that will
depends on your personnel. I think the Seattle Seahawks run it outstanding,
yeah.
And it's a real difficult play in terms of how they run it. But I think we're maybe less than one a game in terms of running zone read plays. So it's not a big part of what we do.
What are your thoughts?
Coach, on
probably won't be with Bradford, I imagine.
Probably not, no.
Coach, what are your thoughts on the second safety spot?
Well, I answered that earlier with Zach, but we'll see. We got some guys in-house that we'll take a look at. There's still opportunities in free agency, and there's also opportunities in the draft, and we'll play it out through OTAs, minicamp, and the preseason.
Have you thought about giving Nolan Carroll a look at safety?
No. Nolan's going to compete for the starting corner spot on the other side.
What about Coach, all the new responsibilities that you have is finding a quarterback and then figuring out how to get a quarterback the way that you obviously did a few weeks ago. Is that the biggest challenge that you have? I mean, specifically about that position as opposed to...
No, I don't think that's the biggest challenge. I think putting together a whole team is the biggest challenge.
That doesn't weigh more than
no.
The others?
No. No, it doesn't.
Would you guys consider, like, Jalen Watkins at safety?
Yeah, Jalen's got versatility. How it will all play itself out. I mean, we got a ton of time, and we have a ton of reps between now and when we got to make a decision on who's going to end up opposite Malcolm. So, Jalen is another guy that will have an opportunity at the safety spot.
What was your evaluation of how Michael Kendricks played last year and how he fits going forward?
I thought when he was healthy, he played really well for us. But, again, we missed him. I don't know if it was four games. You know, it's just the health aspect of it was a difficult thing. And we were a different team without him on the field. I think he's – but when he played really well for us.
Did you say you wanted to keep Macklin? What kept you from franchising him when you had that decision?
Just the price of the tag.
Why? You paid a lot of money for Byron Maxwell. So why was it
we felt
more
corner.
Important to you? You felt corner.
We felt corner was a priority position for us in terms of the questions. You know, what do we need to improve? We needed to improve our secondary.
But do you feel like in doing that, though, and letting in doing that, improving your secondary, but also then not bringing back Jeremy, have you weakened your wide receiver core? And was that
you can't pay everybody. I mean, that's just everybody has the same amount of money, and so you got to divvy it up however you're going to divvy it up. But we were inadequate in terms of the money allocated defensively as we were to offensively, and we're trying to balance that out. And I think it showed in our play.
I would imagine with the offers you had to Malcolm, you had money allocated to that spot, to him. When he didn't sign, how did that change your offseason plans? In terms of the
it didn't. We didn't think there was another receiver that was in that price range in the free agency. So it was... We were going to try to get Mac back. Felt like we gave him a real competitive offer. Kansas City offered him a lot more than we did, and we just weren't going to go that high. So,
getting DeMarco, were you able to do that because Mac?
No, we had always planned on taking two running backs. So,
speaking of salary cap allocation, you talked about using their what you did at Oregon at the running back position, spreading carries out a little more, and you may have to do that now while you return to targets without having like a Macklin in there. Do you feel like your system offensively helps you in terms of the salary cap because you don't have to pay a top guy an exorbitant amount of money, you know, like Corey or Macklin or Deshaun or whatever?
Do I feel our system does? No, I think it's all based on what's available at the time and how do you allocate it, you know? I mean, you can philosophically say, hey, we want to pay X, X, and X at each position, but that's not available to you, you know? We wanted to pay our center really good money because he deserves really good money because Jason's really good. If somebody else was playing center, we wouldn't have that much money allocated at center. I think you can't look at it and say philosophically, let's put a price tag on every position because, number one, you don't get to start from scratch. And then, number two, just because you want to pay your left tackle $10 million, what if there's not a $10 million player available to you at that position? So you just got to kind of – it's an ebb and a flow. It's not a philosophical thing where you can say this or that.
So you're not becoming more of a team where you spread touches and plays out?
It depends on who your players are.
Right. If you have Calvin,
you know, if you had – yeah. You're not going to say philosophically we want to spread it out. If you have a 6'5 guy that's – 240 and runs 4.3, you're going to probably get him the ball a little bit more than somebody else.
I just think when you see stars leaving and you see what's now here, you kind of talked about spreading the ball out. I just wonder if that's
what we were talking about. Spread. No, what I was talking about spreading the ball out is that the way those guys run the football is, I don't believe they one of those guys is going to carry the ball 380 times. And I think it takes a physical toll on you. That wasn't a salary cap philosophical, let's handle it, you know. We ran multiple running backs at Oregon because we had multiple running backs at Oregon. If we didn't have multiple running backs, we would have just hung it on one guy. And when we had someone like LeSean who was head and shoulders above everybody else, then he's going to be the guy that's going to carry the ball and very rarely came out of the game. You know, that's just the nature of how it was set up when I got here. You know, LeSean was head and shoulders above. Now when you have DeMarco and Ryan, you can distribute those carries. I would have loved to. I mean, LeSean had the most carries out of any running back over the last 2 years. If we had, if we could have, I philosophically, you'd like to spread that out. But if you don't have that other guy, then.
But when you lose a guy like McEnroe with 85 receptions, you probably feel like you can make up some of that. You know, Josh Hoff, maybe Zach Ertz getting out, you know, a little more. You know, spread the ball around to DeMarco and Ryan Matthews and Scrolls. I mean, is that kind of how you look at it?
Yeah. Or what do you get in the draft? I mean, I don't. Our team's not set right now, I guess is the best way to say it. You don't know what you have. So, you know, we may get somebody in the draft. You're like, oh, my God, he's better than I thought he was. We need to feed him, you know.
Have you been to both levels, college and pros? How much more imperative is it to have a very, very good quarterback at this level than maybe in college to be successful? Or is it not?
I think it's I think in this sport, no matter what level you play, you better have a really good quarterback. You know, depending on what system you run. Now, what – some people think is good, you know, it may not translate to the next level, but you know, I don't see many teams that aren't successful that don't have really good quarterbacks at any level, whether it's high school, college, or the pros.
You coach it every day, a player should earn his job in practice, but do you think that's different with the quarterback position? Like, do you think it's important to have a guy that you know is going to start, whether good game, bad game, disputed, fair guy?
No, I think all of our guys, once they establish who they are, but they're going to win that position, you know, before you get going. But in season, we don't make many changes once we get going there. But I think everybody, the way I said it is, everybody has an ample opportunity before the season starts to earn their playing time and to set the depth chart.
You play the Patriots this season, or are you still planning on scrimmaging them? And
we don't have a preseason schedule yet, so we're not planning on anything. So I don't know who we're playing. I mean, I don't think that
would
comes
that
out
be
for
something you would.
I don't
avoid,
think that
though?
Comes out for a couple weeks. So
would you try to avoid that though? If you played
you play them in the season, would you be opposed to?
But I'm saying we don't have wherever we're going to scrimmage. If we have an opportunity to scrimmage, it's going to be who we're playing in the preseason. So it'll all be based on what our preseason schedule is. We're not going to go train with a team and then we go play the Baltimore and then they go play somebody else. It doesn't work that way. It just happened that when we looked at our schedule came out, who are we playing, you know, we got a chance to, that's how everybody usually does it. When your schedule comes out, you say, hey, if we want to get together, which game do you want to get together in? Let's do it with this team. And then you talk to them and see if that's something they want to do. I mean, I think Bill did it 2 years ago with Tampa and us, and then last year with Washington and us, because they played Washington first and they played us second. So all those get together deals are based upon your preseason thing. So you got to wait until. I do like the, philosophically, I like the idea, but it depends on who it is, how it's going to be run. You know, I was very in tune to how Bill wanted to do it, and we had a great discussion about it, so it was something I was on board with. But I don't know if we're going to or not with anybody, just depending on how the preseason schedule comes out.
So. To get back to what the Patriots signed Bradley Fletcher, can you just give your insight, your thoughts on what kind of player they're getting?
Yeah. I love Fletch, the ultimate competitor, works his tail off every single day in practice. Is a physical player, played really well for us also on special teams. They're going to get a guy that's a great teammate, will buy into Bill's system 100%. So I think very highly about that.
To get back to what
it's not finished yet, you've got a lot to do. And a general question, just what you wanted to accomplish coming into the offseason with the defense and what you think you've accomplished?
That's still a work in progress. I mean, there's a whole component to it, so it's not a one-day thing or a two-day thing. I mean, there's still players available in free agency, and there's also the draft coming up. So, you know, we're again, it's we're a long ways away from playing. So,
you mentioned Zach Ertz in terms of options through the air, and maybe you can do it different ways. Do we not see the full, skill set of him in terms of how you guys can use your offense, or do you think
I think he's still growing. You know, I think, and Zach will be the first one to tell you that. You know, I know he's working extremely hard in the off season at continuing to get better. So, I mean, I still think there's a big jump that can occur between him even from year two to year three.
What about Ryan Matthews led to your attraction and ultimately acquiring him?
I think his style of running, physical, his speed, you know, he's got legitimate breakaway speed. He ran 4.37 at the combine at 222 pounds. He's also a physical player in pass protection, a bigger back. You know, I think, you know, there was a reason he was drafted where he was drafted, that high in the first round. So,
what's more important to show you this offseason, this season?
Consistency. I just said it earlier. I mean, there's times where he's flashed and you're like, wow, that's a great play, but got to do it on a more consistent basis.
Do you want the outside linebacker now?
We'll see.
A while ago.
We're not playing today, so.
Well, you have more depth now at inside linebacker.
What if they break their ankle tomorrow? Then we move them back. That's why it's not a – it is a hypothetical, so I can't give you an answer. And then you'll go, 27 weeks ago, you said he was definitely an outside linebacker. Well, Acho broke his leg. Two other guys both have salmonella, and they're not here anymore, and he's playing inside linebacker, and you're like, you said he was never going to play inside linebacker before. So,
what went into the coaching staff changes, John Lovett, Ted Williams, and the QB's coach?
Well, Bill left.
Right. But
we got an offensive coordinator position, and then Ted was transitioning into scouting. I think he wants to watch his son play a little bit. He's playing college football now. And then we made maneuvers where we had to improve our secondary. So.
And Ryan Day, what did you see out of him?
I think Ryan was a rising star in football. A lot of people understand the work he's done as the offensive coordinator at Boston College. He's got a real good background from Florida to Temple to BC and a couple stops in between. Smart, intelligent, very good teacher, can really transfer it from the board to his players. You know, I've seen that in action, so. Really excited to have him.
I noted the comments that Trey Thomas made about the main fit in the systems, only one of them being an American. Is he a technology something like this?
I didn't really see it and I heard about it, but I was just disappointed. I mean, we gave Trey a great opportunity. He came in on a Bill Walsh minority internship program. Mr. Lurie was nice enough to keep him on for 2 years, one on offense, one on defense, seeing if he could find a job in the NFL. So I hope Trey does find a job in the NFL. We don't have a job open.
When he makes a comment like that and says that he heard it from inside the locker room, do you feel like it's something that you needed to look into or investigate at all?
No.
Has it ever been brought up to you?
No.
In college or pro?
No.
Were you aware of the report? I guess Trey referenced a study that you have more white players on your roster than other NFL teams.
I don't look at the color of any player. I just look at how do they fit in on our team. So I think we're in 2015. I don't think that's something that's ever come into my mindset.
You brought in Tim Tebow for a workout. Do you foresee bringing him in, giving him a chance?
I don't know. You know, we brought a lot of players in for private workouts. So, I mean, that name just obviously – people look at it, but there's been a lot of players in for private workouts. So we're always looking at who's available and making sure if all of a sudden we have to make a maneuver, it's like, well, what about that guy? I have no idea. You know, we have a framework of where we worked them out 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, 2 months ago. We have film on it. We can study it. So,
Jeffrey, so that we could read notebooks worth of information on the vision that you have in terms of integrating the system from scouting the coaches, et cetera, and the vision that you presented to him this offseason. Give us maybe just a little Cliff Notes version of what that vision is and how you see it unfolding.
I don't think it benefits us to tell anybody else what our vision is.
Between the scouts and the coaching staff. And
I know that, but I don't think that benefits anybody, 31 other teams, for us to say how we do things.
Even if it's in generalities?
I don't think it benefits anybody on the other 31 teams for us to say how we do things. So.
Chip had, how we had final say on the last two drafts.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, though, what kind of input you still had in those players. I mean, obviously, you probably wouldn't have picked them unless you...
I had input, but I didn't have final say.
What about the input on guys like Huff and Taylor?
I stayed out of those guys. I've done it with every guy from Oregon. I said, you guys make your decisions. I had nothing to do with it. I specifically, with any kid from Oregon that came up, I let our scouts and coaches do that.
How's that?
And where they fit.
Do I what?
I don't
know. Picking these Oregon players up.
No, I think we've picked. I think a lot of people did.
How's that going to be going forward in terms of terms of those evaluations, if you removed yourself in the past, obviously you have final say now. How's that different?
When I say I removed myself, I never told them how I felt about a player or what I know about a player, because I want them to make their own evaluation of what that player is. That's what I mean. Tim came in for a private workout, and that's why they're private workouts.
Chip, if you didn't want a player, if Howie said, we want this guy, and you didn't want him, would you have said, listen, I'm not comfortable with that player? Wouldn't you have?
No, I give my opinion. That's all done before the draft ever happens. It's not a day of the draft. Oh my God, what are we doing? I mean, it doesn't work that way.
It was a lot of moving parts the last draft, so things kind of moved while the draft was going on.
Yeah, that's what happens on draft day. We're prepared for all that. We go through all scenarios of what if this is there, what if that is there, what about this, what about that, and then everybody weighs in.
So you're okay with the picks once they're picked?
Everybody's okay with the picks once they're picked. They're on your team. Right?
All right, guys, we're done.